Welcome, this is William Evans, and we're shifting gears. I'm speaking today with Danny Watson in Waitangi, New Zealand, and we are at the Waitaha Water Gathering. Welcome, Danny.
Oh, tēnā koe e ho. Greetings, my friend.
It's great to be with you. Tell me, who are the Waitaha?
Waitaha are a collective or a nation of very early people that are now primarily based in the islands of New Zealand and have shrunk in numbers, but have connections and tribal connections and tribal memories that extend from the Middle East down through Madagascar, archipelago of India, Southeast Asia, Asia proper, Northern Japan, Alaska, down through the Americas, South America, Rapa Nui, Easter Island, which we know as Waitangi Ki Roto. Primarily now, strong connections in the Pacific Rim.
And what's your relationship with water?
Well, our word for water is wai. And wai taha, a taha is a container or a gourd. So you and I, in essence, are containers of water. We're 80 to 90% water. So lunatic. The moon affects us just like it does the tide. I mean, you know, when we get angry, we boil our water. When we're calm, our water is very calm. That's where it comes from.
And what's happening at this meeting?
This hui, which means meeting or gathering, the call went out to anybody anywhere in the world to bring their water from their particular places. Some are sacred places, some are literally creeks and rivers in their backyard, to bring them together so that the memory of water. Water has a memory, and it can reconnect all those waters, reconnect the memory of the water being clean, pure, drinkable, with the hope that we will go away from the gathering and go home and be able to bring some level of influence in the powers that be that we need to clean up our rivers.
And there's a process and a stature that goes with that. Can you talk about that?
Goes with the gathering or the...
With the intention of cleaning up the water and how that's done. And is it a contest or a vote, or how is that accomplished?
My own, I won't speak on behalf of Waitaha per se, but my own belief within our tribe is that as individuals, we have power, but we have greater power in the collective. So if you and I decide that we're going to clean up 100 metres or 100 yards of our local river, and we just do good plantings, fence out the stock, get the rubbish and the garbage out of there, our neighbours will watch us do it. And they'll ask us why. And then when they see the changes on the river banks, as well as in the water, the hope is that without pressure, without any political alliances whatsoever, they'll see the wisdom in actually cleaning up the river. They will benefit.
So you have a long tradition of living by example, being a living example.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, we would like to think that we walk our talk. Otherwise,
Your walk is exceptional in this time, in that you're not an aggressive, violent walker.
No, well, why? You and I can argue. You and I can have all the disagreements in the world. But if I punch you in the nose, does it change your opinion or your idea? No way. If I embrace you, or I even embrace some of your ideas and mix them like the waters with mine, there's a possibility that we will come to an understanding.
And this tradition of peacefulness, no unnecessary violence, is not something new.
No, this is who we are. It's why we've been subjugated as a people for thousands and thousands of years, and we've moved from one land to another land, almost pushed ahead of the violent people. And this is our last little lifeboat, the bottom of the Pacific, Aotearoa, and we love it.
And you've been here how long?
We've been here for thousands of years. Me, just a few. I've only been on the planet for a few.
And you came from most recently?
Me individually?
No.
Us as people? Yes. We came out of the west, east, and north of the Pacific. And we came in waves. What happened was, if you look at the Pacific, it's like this giant basin. And our ancestors, our tupuna, used to leave here in waka or vaka, depending on where you are, double hulled. And they go out with young men and women on them, some of them already pregnant. And they go off and they take trade goods off into South America and all the way up through the Americas, down through Asia. During that journey, people would get on and off. So the human seed got planted and changed and exchanged. And every 23 to 25 years, the current shifts. And that double hawaka would go the other way. And once again, there would be the transference of human seed, but also the picking up of those that had been away from home for long enough to come home or had died. And we bring their bones back home.
And this has been going on for many thousands of years.
Thousands and thousands of years. And then as we had change and we had new waves of people coming in here over 1,000 years ago, that changed and got more difficult.
So what's it like to be a man in a pretty competitive world with a lot of bullies and have a way of life where you stand tall in peace?
It's easy and it's hard. It's black and white. It's the dichotomy of life. I was bullied as a youngster. But the thing with a bully is he knocks you down, you get up. He knocks you down, he gets up, he knocks you down, he gets up. Eventually, he misses. And that's when you have permission to leave one mark. And if you can't do it with a word, you will do it in some way that he'll go, this really wasn't worth it. Or, if you're in a business situation, or you're in a situation of confrontation, why throw petrol on the fire? Just back off. There's always tomorrow. The tide will go out, the tide will come in.
So you're clear enough in your identity.
Very. I know who I am.
That you aren't run by fear.
Nope.
And the bully can't really do a job on you.
There's no job to do. Look, my father gave me some really good advice. My dad once said to me, and this was aimed at the bully, he said, what's the worst they can do? And I thought about it for a while, and I said, kill me. He said, yeah. Well, son, you're going to die at the end of this life. Now that you know that, you're very dangerous. He should be worried about you, because you don't care.
Well, most of the bullies have a weak identity.
Yep.
And they're afraid.
At some level, yes.
They're scared.
Yep.
Are you scared?
What's there to be scared of?
So, have you always been this way? Did you grow up and learn to stand this way?
I started wrestling when I was four. I trained under the US American Olympic coach, Dale Thomas. I boxed. I still do martial arts. I swim. I laugh. I cry. I giggle. I do everything.
And what martial arts do you do?
I do traditional karate and Iaido with a Japanese sword.
And what have you learned from those?
You can do an awful lot without unsheathing your sword.
This is William Evans. I'm speaking with Danny Watson at the Waitaha Water Gathering in Waitangi, New Zealand. What's happening to the environment in New Zealand?
We have a pristine environment, but there are aspects of commercialization that will quietly destroy what we have. If I use the analogy of you live in a grass hut and all of your food is grown locally, you can dispose of the leaves that are the plate out the window. They will rot away or become part of the garden. But we have cans and plastic. And as a society, we're still throwing them out the window. They don't disappear.
And into the ocean.
Absolutely. And pollute our water and our rivers. 70% of the world are drinking polluted water. 70%. If you go right up into the Himalayas, go to somewhere like Nepal, where they have more water, an abundance of water fed by hundreds of glaciers, their people have to walk kilometres, or in American sense, miles, to get a bucket of water for their house. Madness. Why? The water's dirty. Because there's people upstream throwing their rubbish out the window.
And water has a memory.
Yeah. Have you ever poured a glass of beer?
Sure.
Okay. What shape does it take when you pour it into a glass of beer?
It takes the shape of the glass as long as it resides in the glass.
Then you take the same beer and pour it into another glass, it'll take the same shape again. It has a memory. That's an analogy for what water does is it has a very basic form. H2O. It doesn't change unless it picks up minerals or has silt or rubbish or whatever thrown into it. So that memory of that purity, that's what the water wants. That's what the water needs. That's what we want. Our taha, our good, our waitaha, needs that clean water. Collectively, we have a memory. If we're not here, the water doesn't have a memory of us. If the water's not here, we don't have a memory of the water. The duality of that is that at a microscopic level, if you pinch your skin, if you do that with your skin, like lift a piece of skin on your hand, or those that are listening, just pull it up, pinch it between your fingers and lift it up, and then watch it go back down. It does it like water.
So I'm aware that the health tragedy of our time is disconnection.
Yes.
Can you talk about your understanding of that and your observations and what you've learned?
We live in a world based on me and I. I am the center of my universe. I want this. I want that. I go to McDonald's. I want my hamburger now. I want my car filled up now. I. Well, hang on a minute. I is not sustainable. I can't recreate or procreate. It takes two of us. You and I, it's not going to work.
Right.
But it takes two to procreate. So the least sustainable number in the universe is two. Now, if you have male and female, call it essence, whatever you like, and they procreate, they create 3, 4, 5, 10 or whatever. It's exponential. It just grows and grows and grows. So what we have is we have a possibility where we've disconnected so much that we live as individuals in our little houses, drive our little cars to our little place of work, and there is no connection. If you do that with your food, and if you do that with medicine, you're in big trouble.
The Waitaha tradition has been one of living in connection rather than disconnection.
Not just connected with each other, connected with the land. When the Europeans came to New Zealand, we couldn't understand that they would literally dump their human waste in the bay they would catch fish in. We don't do that. We have a place where you do your toilet. We have a place where you catch food. We have a place where you prepare food. And nothing is wasted, and it's all done in a beautiful balance. Because your human waste actually has a use somewhere.
Feeds the circle if used correctly.
Yes, but not in the bay where you're going to catch your fish. That's in simple terms. You extrapolate that out and put 1,000 cows on a paddock or 1,000 pigs in a shed or 1,000 chooks together, there is no balance. There is no harmony. It's only sustained with drugs, antibiotics, and a false economy. But free-range hens, they taste better. They laugh and dance, and their eggs are unbelievable.
Right. Yeah, we have a wonderful organic farm just upstream a few miles.
Oh, well, I'll come and visit.
Sure.
We'll have bacon and eggs for breakfast.
Absolutely. So what have you learned from this meeting?
I've learned that there's a lot of like-minded people in the world that are very, very concerned for the water of the world. If the water isn't looked after at every level, we're gone. We die. We're having trouble with the bees. I'm a beekeeper, by the way. We're having trouble with the bees. Why having trouble with the bees? You put all your bees in a beehive on a semi-trailer and drive it into an almond orchard that's got no feed for the bees and feed them sugar. You think that thing supersized me when the McDonald's was bad? Go and talk to a bee. That's what we're doing with our water. Water isn't for the latrine. It's not where you dump stuff. It's not the convenience to get it out of your backyard. Water is the very essence of life. Your vegetables, your stock, you need the water. And it needs to be clean and pure. If it's not, your stock aren't clean and pure, your food's not clean and pure, and you are in trouble.
And so you've been having these meetings for a long time, every 50 years.
Every 50 years, on a particular meeting up of three-star patterns here in the north of the North Island in New Zealand, we meet, and that there is a discussion, and I guess you'd call it a calendar for what's happened to the water all over New Zealand and where we think it may go and the difficulty we will have in the next 50 years.
And how long have you been doing these 50-year cycle of meetings?
Forever.
Thousands of years.
Thousands of years.
And so your people have gone through some assimilations.
Lots.
How do they continue to pass this knowledge of how to stand tall in a violent culture without shrinking into smallness and contracting in fear?
Like in America, in the United States, you pass legislation where the Native Americans could not practice their own religions and beliefs. We had those as well. We had that up until 1989 when the Suppression of Tohunga Act or Shaman Act was uplifted. The particular families that were the libraries and held the knowledge in their heads and in the rock drawings and other places, they would place some of their sons or daughters in various churches where they could be official priests, and some sons and daughters were hidden. So there was this big mask worn, and it was kept within the family.
A big mask
is worn. So
is worn.
You become an Anglican priest, but in the background, you're really a shaman. You become the, yeah.
And so, for our listeners, a mask worn on the face in the world, but underneath the mask is a wisdom of ancient, peaceful, nonviolent stature of tallness.
And we kept a lot of our histories hidden for the reason that people were taking them, publishing them, selling them, claiming them as their own. It was decided by one of our great uncles in the late 1980s that it was time for us to come out of the darkness into the light and shed our history. See, the history comes from this place. When you go to a new land, you watch the water. You check the fish and see if they're deformed. And if they're not, you know that water's clean. You eat the flesh of the bird before you eat the berry, because then you know if the flesh of the bird is bitter, the berry it's eating is poisoned. You do that with every living thing on the new land. You collate it, you put it into your library, you store it.
So when your people landed
anywhere
on the coast of New Zealand, for example, you were watching the water, seeing which springs were good to drink from.
Yes.
And from that, learned from the animals.
Yes.
And then the plants.
Yes. You go into an area where you'll grow crops. You light a fire, see what the wind does. You put up kites, see where the frost is. You don't just go in and put your precious seed into the ground. You take time. And you have that very quiet walk on the land, very quiet journey. So then what happens is you treat the land and the water and all of it gently, and it does the same back.
And all of this was accumulated in an oral history.
Still, and it's still held.
That is still held and still transmitted.
Yep. I've been part of that process.
And at what age did you start to learn that process?
Intrinsically, I think you start learning it from birth. Really as an adult, later as an adult. Add up water to the circle of the family to to learn.
And what's your responsibility now as a grandfather?
Oh, everything. We have a lovely word for grandchild. Moko puna. A puna is a spring, like a spring of water. Moko is a pattern. Like you'll see the Māori guys with a pattern carved on their face. So that's your genetic pattern. Your grandchild is the spring of your genetic pattern. In fact, if you break the word down even further, pu is essence and nā is the very core of who you are. So a mokopuna is the pattern, the genetic pattern of me. Now, if I don't look after the environment, what inheritance does my mokopuna have? It inherits a spring that's piddle, that's rotten. It inherits land that won't grow crops. It inherits beehives that are empty. So my responsibility as a grandfather is to make sure the environment is as pristine as it should be. So my mokopuna can carry my gene pool down through their mokopuna.
So this is a kind of strength that isn't aggressive, and yet it's not timid, it's at full power.
If you stand in your truth and use the words of my father, what's the worst thing they're going to do to you?
You're going to die.
Going to die anyway.
Yep.
Let's have a hell of a journey along the way, Will.
Anything else you can think of you'd like to tell me that has come at this meeting that you've learned or that you think would be important for people in America? Where, you know, America is in an interesting place. There's this strange love affair with guns and a lot of unnecessary aggressiveness, so that we can't come together and really collectively solve major problems like energy and how to protect the water from drilling and fracking. Any suggestions you might have from your experience in life here in New Zealand in this tradition?
You call yourselves the United States of America. The only time you're united is when you're singing the national anthem or standing under your flag with your hand on your heart. The disassociation between races, cultures, and states in the United States looks like a real mishmash from outside. My observation is that as a huge power in the universe and as effectively the center of the commercial universe, the United States needs to become the grandfather instead of the bolshy young 20-year-old that wants to go out and sort the world's problems out. If the United States became the grandfather and started to look inwards at the backyard and the river and the orchard, your mokopuna will be setting an example for the rest of the world. An example where they won't point a gun at you. They'll put their hand out and say, could you come and build a school? Can you come and teach us?
What do you remember about your grandfather?
Unfortunately, the only grandfather I knew was an adopted granddad. My nana married second time, and he was granddad. Loved him. Loved him to bits. He was an ex-seaman, a little eccentric, but I was surrounded by amazing uncles. And when you've got lots of uncles that are fantastic role models, and role models in the community, that'll twist your ear or kick your butt, as you guys would say, you're going to turn out okay.
And were some of those uncles of the Waitaha tradition?
Yeah, I was blessed in our community with several men that had been well-versed in this law, this L-O-R-E. Yeah. And it rubbed off.
It sure did.
Yeah.
It's been beautiful. Thank you, Danny.
Well, it's been really nice having you in Aotearoa, too.
I look forward to talking to you again.
Yes, please.
This is William Evans. You're listening to Shifting Gears. I've been speaking with Danny Watson, in Waitangi, New Zealand, at the Waitaha Water Gathering. This is KDNK. Thank you for listening.